If you want to support this podcast and get a full ad-free episode, sign up to Headstuff Plus.
This show is part of the Headstuff Podcast Network.
Come through, lipstick thespians. I'm James.
And my name is Keenan. I was rooting for us. Welcome to Sissy That Pod, the RuPaul Drag Race Reaction Podcast on the Headstuff Podcast Network. Today we're discussing Drag Race Season 13, Episode 4, with the wonderful and ever-talented Paul Ryder.
Yep, he was great and had a lot to say about the wigs on the green drama of Joey J versus Michelle Visage last week, which was interesting to be able to chat to someone who kind of has that similar drag aesthetic.
It was the first question I asked him, and I actually felt bad afterwards. I was like, I should have eased him in. I should have asked him how he was enjoying the season.
No. This is a Frost versus Nixon moment. You know, you need to get in there, ask the hard questions, you know?
I am the gay Jeremy Paxman. What can I say? Okay, well, welcome to the podcast again. The third time now. It's Paul Ryder. Paul Ryder, welcome back to the show.
Thank you so much for having me.
Let's open up with the hot topic of last week's episode of Joey J as a queen who doesn't wear wigs. Is it good to see that representation? And how did you feel, Michelle? How do you think her comments landed?
Okay, right.
We're going in deep quickly.
Okay, excuse me. Let me just do something. Yeah, we're gonna crack open that cup of tea on this one. First of all, to see the representation of Joey J was something actually really, really exciting, because for so long at the start of my career, everyone just said, but you're not wearing a wig, behind a really, really snarky way of saying it. And it was almost the reason I gave up. It was almost the reason just before IGT, which I've said on this podcast before, was the reason that I was going to give up drag and give up, because I just didn't feel like I was being taken seriously. And then all of a sudden, it was being taken seriously. And people like Michelle, which I sent a tweet out last week quoting Michelle, said, drag isn't everything you see on RuPaul's Drag Race. Drag is everything from Paul Ryder to Panty Bliss to X, Y, and Z. And then you saw Joey J, you know, be announced as the representative in that sort of guise for Drag Race this year. And it was a really, really nice thing. I knew there was going to be some comments. I knew there was going to be some, you know, berating of the style of drag as the season went on. I just really didn't expect it to be in the first episode.
Yes. Yeah. That's, I think, the thing. Give him a chance. Because if fair enough, he'd come out week in, week out, week in, week out with the in one particular style. And to be fair, you can do so much without a wig that, like, he could have represented himself in many different ways without a wig. But give him a couple of weeks to show versatility.
Yeah, like, I completely agree. And actually, it's made me think, and it's made me put pen to paper to go, okay, well, what can I do to step my pussy up? As you know, as lockdown is kind of coming out and we're all going to go back to gigs and stuff like that. And there is that added pressure that now Michelle and Ross have turned to Joey J and said, yeah, we need to see more. I'm very aware that as a person in a very similar way, I'm going to have to show more because the pressure is on to do more. And I have, you know, messaged designers and stuff like that to kind of go, okay, where can we bring the bottom half of it right up to the top half? And how can I change and progress? But that is what drag is. And I appreciate that is what drag is progression. Drag is not what was last week is changing this week. And because of lockdown and because of the skills, the kids, we'll call them, are gaining in lockdown, we're all having to step our pussies up. Every single fucking one of us. So, you know, nobody is safe from that. I just thought it was a bit quick off the bat for Michelle and Ross to really berate the style and to kind of really go ham at him a little bit because he did it three times in one episode. It was a little bit much. But in defense of kind of Michelle, I feel like they're talking from a panel of what they're talking about when it comes to Drag Race USA. They are talking about the aesthetic that is probably on a list when you apply for RuPaul's Drag Race. You need X, Y, A, B, C, D. So I feel like those comments came from her aesthetic for that show as her judge in that position.
Yeah, that's fair enough. And you see, I suppose I messaged you when we saw the Meet the Queens and Joey J was talking about it. And I was like, okay, this obviously is going to be a storyline. But I, in my naivety, thought that sort of guff would come from the other queens. So I was kind of disappointed to see it came straight away from Michelle and Ross. And what kind of stood out to me was Joey J also kind of wore the same silhouette three times. Yeah. So I thought when they were talking about diversity, they were like, change up the silhouette.
Yeah.
But she specifically goes, hopefully it's going to be diverse and they have wigs. And I was like, oh, so the wig was the issue, really, was it?
Yeah, exactly. And like there was a bit of samey there with Joey J, but it's kind of, I've always, when somebody says to me, what do you do? Or do you like to be known as a drag queen or a drag this or a drag that? I always say, I'm a drag performer.
Yeah.
And I perform. So, but you see, like I said, nowadays you're having to chase your tail because there's always something else coming up and there's always more to obtain and to do, I suppose.
Yeah. I think on this season as well, they do seem to be very much pushing, and it's great to see a sense of inclusion and expanding the boundaries of what drag is. So obviously you've got Gottmik there, which is bringing a whole new element into it. Then there is like you've got the different styles of drag being represented through with Joey J, and then the more kooky queens right through to the more kind of pageanty queens. And even just in the way the show is being edited, it's all being done in a very positive way, in a very kind of like, we're together, we're going to kind of, you know, there's no losers here, is really being kind of a highlighted. It's a supportive sisterhood, which is lovely to see. So I kind of think expanding that a bit further to give a bit more of an opportunity for people to showcase who they are, rather than just coming for them in the first episode, would have probably been just what I would have been expecting, I suppose. But as you say, Drag Race is a very specific thing and drag is a very different thing to that. So it's kind of a case of you're trying to figure out where those two things meet.
Yeah, my only problem with those two different things and meeting them in the middle is that the kids at home, they just see drag as whatever they see on RuPaul's Drag Race. And to a lot of people, to a lot of straight people, but the amount of messages I got from my friends be like, oh my God, there's somebody on Drag Race who's not wearing a wig. Like, this is great. This is da da da. And the week following, I got the messages being like, oh my God, like Michelle really kind of went for it. And like, she's so supportive of you. What's that about? And you're like, okay, here we go. Right, everyone sit down. Let's open up the storybook and let's read a little note.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? But listen, take it on the chin. You show people through your own art. And today's news is tomorrow's fish paper. So as of this episode, it wasn't touched upon and it wasn't discussed. Guarantee it will come up again in the past because they don't need those little seeds for no fucking reason.
Yeah.
So, but look, he'll cross those bridges when he comes to it. He's on Drag Race and it's a visual representation to show you that drag is not just all of the geesh that you see.
Absolutely. And it has to be pointed out, and we'll get there as well, the most sickening look on the runway this week, not a wig in sight. So...
And to be fair, it does seem like Rue is adapting the way he's changed up his Gentleman Search Your Engines now. It's made a best drag queen win. So he does seem to be taking on board the criticism of the fan base. So that's good that he's kind of changing.
And changing in a point, I have it as a note here, even changing to a point of that walkthrough with the workroom, he looked like he was enjoying himself for the first time in the US Drag Race in so long. He actually, like that laugh that he had with Utica, I laughed, and it's the exact same sort of hearty laugh you get when watching the UK, and even the USA girls were kind of looking, going, "Do we laugh? Do we not laugh?" Whereas with the UK, they just get involved. Like, that's the humor. Yes. So I'm happy to see Rue bring some of that happiness over to USA for season 13. Really, really like it. I was a bit confused after the week one and week two. And I really didn't enjoy episode one with the six different things. I just was like, okay, next. This is kind of boring
repetitive
to me. Yeah. But it set me up to enjoy episode two and episode three and, you know, four a little bit better because there was a new twist and there was something new. Mm. And everything's a learning curve. You cannot just shoot it down after the first episode and go, God, this season's shit, because it's not. And I am enjoying it. I do enjoy the different characters and the different groups that are being set up. So it's and now we're into the kind of the swing of the season. So overall, I'm kind of enjoying it. Some really, really good characters.
But even though they are spreading that positive message, they're still stirring drama by hiding Elliot behind that partition screen.
I live for that. I loved it.
In fairness, I would like to hide Elliot behind a partition screen that she can't open.
I think my favorite, I saw the memes of Elliot hiding behind the thing were absolutely hilarious. I think the funniest one I saw was someone had superimposed Bernie Sanders with the mittens and the mask sitting in there instead. I was like, yeah, that is like the perfect encapsulation of pop culture at the moment.
That was kind of mean. I didn't mean it in a negative way. It's just that they have set up Elliot in a way to kind of be that annoying sister of the season so far. Yeah. So, you know, and she...
It's the vocal fry. It just... Yeah. Guys.
It's very that. The eyes. It's the constant look of deer in the headlights. I'm like, what are you searching for? Like, my Botox is good, but hers works hard. Like,
Yeah, because Kimora Hall was saying, oh, she's such an annoying voice. And I was like, okay, why are they saying this? It must be a Kimora Elliot lip sync, you know, towards the end of the episode. No, they just wanted to throw her voice for nothing.
They just wanted to rip the piss out of her. But do you know what? At the start of the episode, I kind of felt sorry for those girls, for those waiters who were already kind of waiting there, because they put a look together for literally 4 minutes and 27 seconds. Like, that just goes to show you the money you have behind you. And for anyone listening or anyone watching, like, drag is really not cheap. So, like, to have that look pulled together, to literally just stand there for 4 minutes and then go, right, girls, take it off. We're going to reset and start shooting the workroom. You're like, oh, my God.
Yeah. Well, presumably everyone who's in episode 2 had a LeMay look they didn't get to show. Presumably everyone who's in episode 1 that had a Sheer look they didn't get to show. So, yeah, I'm sure that's how quick and hard the producers are with you know, we'll just tell them to get everything and they might not even have to use it.
Yeah, absolutely.
So this week was the acting challenge. Which team did you think did the best?
I think I enjoyed the most the April Fool's rush in, which was Got Mick, Joey J, Candy Muse, Tamisha Aman and Tina Burner. Mm-hmm. I enjoyed that one the most. And I think I enjoyed it most because it got Mick for some reason. Facial expressions. And first of all, I thought she was serving me Sharon Needles' mini realness. When she came in, I thought, that's a very Sharon look. And even the growth of Tamisha Aman from the initial, whoa, to what became, we love progression, we love growth, and I love to see her kind of like take on the acting challenge and really, really take it home. And as a thing to watch, because I'm not a big massive fan of the acting challenges, I really think they need to be dumped and gotten rid of. I think they're tired and they're really, really old and they're not entertaining, they're not funny.
The writing isn't good.
No.
I liked the I love a Hallmark movie. I love the kind of like that they all have the same kind of they all have the same plot of like a woman who's got too big for her boots who gets sent home and then gets taken down a peg or two and realizes that actually having kids and marrying someone is really the life she wants. Like, I really enjoy that and I thought it was a clever take for them to do that. And I think of all the acting challenges we've seen, this is probably the least offensive. Like, if you think back to that one, the world's worst last year, which was kind of cringe.
But that was more of an improv challenge.
Yeah, well, I found this one less cringe overall, but still. Ooh.
It was better than, like, Why Did It Have to Be Black Panther and Good God Girl Get Out. Those were bad.
Let it happen a little bit later when they can just kind of chill because everyone's on their tenter hooks. So maybe push it a little bit further in the season before you go throwing them in the deep end.
I think as well from the judges' point of view, I think the judges need to be a little less, they need to be a little freer with allowing the people interpret the script in whatever way they want to interpret it. Because if you don't know, if you've never seen, you know, Whatever Happened to Baby Jane, or, you know, if you aren't familiar with Bette Davis, then you aren't going to know those references. And like, you know, fair enough, you should know your history, you should know some of these things. But if you don't know it, you don't know it. So you have to be allowed to have the interpretation that you make of it, rather than being sat there and being like, no, you have to do it like this, or you have to do it like that, like kind of, rather like not being read for that. Because I found that was a little bit trying through this episode, where it was kind of like, no, we don't want you to give we want you to give this impersonation of Bette Davis or of Joan Crawford.
And as well as that, like, that wasn't probably in their script. And some of these kids, Olivia Lux, perhaps, is doing drag for 18 months. She's not gay, or she's not in drag because of Bette Davis or because of X, you know, whatever. She's gay because of you. She's gay because of Drag Race. She's doing this because of your TV show, not a TV show that she was supposed to learn in 18 months, because I'm still learning gay references. There's still things that I haven't got a clue on. So you're completely right. I did feel like that kind of rolled the eye of, oh, don't you know what this is from? No, I really, really didn't. And unless you told me, I really, really didn't. That probably would have been me, but I guarantee you standing there, I'd be like, no, Mr. Matthews, I didn't have a clue. I'm sorry.
But the same when Rue asked Tamisha, was she a Cher fan? She's like, yeah, I love a Cher fan. It's like, name five Cher songs that aren't Believe.
You mentioned this already. Rue was being hilarious in the workroom. The way that she was with Tamisha Mann, like, that's so shady. And then with Got Mick as well, where it's like, right, you've got a good memory, you can remember your lines. Okay, well, tell me, the fun she was having in the workroom was, it really brought a levity to that whole bit.
But in fairness, we're all a fan of Cher, but like, you put me on the spot to go name five songs. I really probably don't know five other songs. In my head, I was going, Believe, and then she went, don't say Believe. Yeah. Oh, shit.
That's the only one you can think of there. Like, that is a real psychological trick. It's like, okay, name an elephant that isn't pink. And you're like, oh crap. I was like, shoop shoop song. I know that one anyway.
It was that immediate moment of gypsy. No. Not even the song.
Burlesque? I don't know. I think my favorite would have been the Flag Day one, just because I thought Simone stole the show by like changing her factory. And Rosé was good as well with her finger in the dam. But let's talk about Jeffrey Boyer Chapman. Where did he come from?
Oh my God, I have that here. I kind of said, what? Like, first of all, and then I wrote down, good to see that they still like him after Canada's Drag Race. Yeah. And then I said to myself, hold on, maybe they were filmed back to back. Like, were they trying, like, shit, what were they trying to then escape and be like, pull him off, get him out of there.
The one thing I was thinking, I was like, was he actually in those spaces talking? Because he would have had to, because they filmed this during COVID.
I can't remember who it was, but one Queen's sight line was wrong when they were supposed to be looking at Jeffrey Boyer Chapman. At one point, they were kind of looking below him, if you know what I mean. So I think that obviously he green-screened it somewhere else. And are they filming Drag Race Canada, you know, season two?
They're casting at the moment.
They're casting at the moment. So therefore, if they're casting at the moment, they may have done a bit of promo, or they may have done something where Jeffrey could have been in one studio. And in fairness, they can if you're clever about it, they can grab him and green screen him at home. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
A bit of a thing up and the right lighting and stuff like that. They might be able to do it that way. But it was just such a weird thing. And it's so funny that it hasn't renewed our love for him because he came on the screen. And I actually heard a groan across the whole nation go, oh, for Jesus. I thought we got rid of you.
It's just like, it's like the broccoli. It's like, when are you going to let this joke die? Yeah.
No. My one thing that I'm kind of keep seeing it, and it was in it around this time, is the competition that Rosé keeps flagging with everybody. So Rosé just keeps saying to go, oh, she's an acting queen, I've got some competition there, maybe it's between me and her for this. I'm like, Rosé, everything con is not a competition. You do not need to, like, who had the bigger poo today? Me and her now up against this. I'm like, Rosé, calm down. Let the love in, sis. Just enjoy your time together.
I've had 7 wanks in the hotel. How many have you guys had?
Oh my God. No, you are right though. Rosé sees herself from the top, and she sees herself, like, she is, whoever she feels is the queen to beat, she's pissing herself against. Which obviously has a drive there, but like, yeah, you're right. Like, cool down.
Cool it down. She's like, oh, she's an actress. Oh, I too am an actress, and I need to show that I'm an actress. Give it a rest on.
Let's talk about Kimora as the tree. I mean, she was really prompted, and she couldn't get that line rooted to save her life.
And I did know that reference. Obviously, that is the Tyra Banks reference. You know, we were rooting for you. We were all rooting for you. But Kamora, as I've been calling her, she just really didn't deliver. Like, you know, cue the pun of you were stiff, you were wooden, you were every single thing going known to man. And it is, like it was called on the runway, you could just see it. It was just her getting into her head. She's the prettiest. She's never had to be the funniest. She's never had to be X, Y, and Z. Yeah. She's always coined as the prettiest girl. And it was just a really tough play for her. And I think she just got into her head. But the whole fact that she bodied up to be a green screen, I was like, yes.
Bring in the fantasy.
Use that illusion at every opportunity, Kimura.
Own your branchy bum, babe. Like, yeah. You really have it.
But that was probably the inner saboteur working again, being like, okay, I don't want to give the judges any reason to critique me, so I'm going to body up for the tree because I don't want them to slag me for not having boobs.
And it was the most ill-fitting green screen outfit I've ever seen in my life. So clearly she didn't get that made. Like, clearly that was something from production. And I can see production just throwing it over the heads going, here, you wear this. And her being like, because it was gangly under the arm and the nipples were just weird. It was just a strange one. But it was upsetting to see her kind of really, really falter, especially when so many people were doing so well across the challenges.
Did you think Elliot did a good job? Because a narrative that's going to go into next week's episode and that was across Untucked for this week's episode was that Candy thought Elliot should have been in the bottom. What did you guys think of Elliot with 2T's performance?
Oh, I like forgettable.
Do you remember they were Cupid? It was Cupid. And I just remember one line Olivia was like, how am I going to make them fall in love? And Olivia was like, wasn't that your job? And
yes.
They fired the bow.
Sorry.
Only touch point I had for
her. Do you know why? The only reason I remember this, because I loved the hair. The wig for me just gave the wig everything.
The wig was great. Beautiful.
And I kind of thought, save that for the runway, hon. But yeah, if I was looking at that and I wasn't looking at the performance, I think that just goes to show. But in your mind, she was always behind everybody. She was always stood behind the back of the room. So there was no kind of, I'm taking the forefront. And that's not her problem. That's the problem of whoever was directing the piece. But it's also her problem probably not to say, I'd like to deliver that line up front. Do you know that sort of way? So you can play it 100 different ways.
I think with Denali, what I'm feeling of her is I think that of the pork chop queens, she is the queen who has taken that kind of like that stigma or that kind of like loss of the first lip sync and ending up in the bottom group the most to heart. And I think that comes back to her kind of like sports person, sort of like athletic kind of like competitiveness. And it's like, you probably need to just like, because I'd say one of the reasons why she took this opportunity now was to kind of go, no, look at me, I'm here. And I, in a way, she got her opportunity, because while she messed up the acting challenge, that lip sync was phenomenal.
Oh, so fantastic.
I didn't think you were going to talk about it this quick, but let's do it. I like whatever I thought of her in the challenge and whatever I thought was going on throughout the episode and whatever, you know, I didn't like about it. Then she did that lip sync and I just kind of thought from the first beat of that song, which, and I didn't know the song, it's 100% Pure Love by Crystal Waters, I think it is.
I didn't
know the song, but my God, by the end, it was the first thing I put on the HomePod after the episode finished, because I was like, I need to hear that again. And if that's what a queen can do for somebody, that's top notch. Yes. That's top class.
I'm trying to think of an individual lip sync performance that was better than that. It's tough.
No, it is. Like you're into your kind of like Tatiana versus Alyssa, kind of back to your Coco Montrese days. Like that is like that's the level I thought that we were at with that. And it was very good.
However much Kimura slowed things down, like she genuinely was a slug. There was no dragon about that performance whatsoever. She was a slug.
The dragon turned into a slug.
Dragging a trail of piss around that runway. Whilst the cockatoo just came through, I was like, what?
That's like a kid's book, The Cockatoo and the Slug.
May the best farm animal win. I guarantee you Victoria's Secret's little fingers are running away with herself. She, like, I can hear the click from Dublin 8, like, she click, click, click.
So James, if I were one of the Sissy That Pod premium content subscribers and I listened to the most recent episode of RuPaul's Drag Race Vegas review, what would I hear?
I mean, so much you would hear. I mean, I can't even begin to imagine how enriched your life experience would be by having had that content within your ear holes. That would be my main takeaway from it. But no, we're on to episode 2, which is opening night, and it is a hot mess. You get Jamal Sims in there giving those girls, reading those girls down for the fact that they are not getting their moves right. And then when we get to the opening, the curtain call, the girls are disrupted by Naomi Smalls, who is, like, honestly, one of the greatest reality show villains. I mean, obviously, she got rid of poor old Manila off of All Stars and we were all shook and gagged, but she comes into her own in this show. She really manages to sort of walk that line between being an awful, horrible witch of a woman and also just so entertaining that you couldn't take your eyes off. She shows up an hour late to the curtain call and then makes the entire thing about her, and it is a beautiful moment to behold.
Absolutely. So Chris is Adam Dumb, a digital content creator, was joining us for the episode, and he actually told James how they make tea in the US.
James was
shook,
I can tell you. And also apparently they do it in Australia as well.
Yeah. And we also speak about how the Canadians pour milk. There's a lot in there. It's a cultural experience. So if you want to sign up to the Sister Pod premium content, it's over at headstuffpodcast.com. You can subscribe. It's only €5 a month, and not only do you get that, you get all the bonus content for all the podcasts on the network, so it's an absolute bargain. But don't worry if that's not for you, we are still here to entertain you, so don't worry. Okay, let's get back to the show. Will we chat a bit about the mirror moments? The standout was about Tamisha and her kids. I know we heard a bit about it, but I suppose we got the maths. So we found out she had those twins when she was 14.
Yes, I had heard that it was an early, like, you kind of, you if you do the mirror, you've obviously done the maths, but I know she did say something about it being very early in one of the earlier episodes. That's commitment and, well, commitment, that's life.
Yeah.
And she has how many children?
So she has three children. I think it's
twins and then another birth.
And then two. And I heard her say, "My second baby, mama." I was like, "Oh, you got yourself around, girl."
Yeah, exactly. You got to know yourself before you figured out.
And look, she's what, 50 years of age? She's 49, 50 years of age.
49, yeah.
So obviously things were quite different 50 years ago. And it could have been a case of, you know, from her background, where she lived, you know, it could have been a force of thing. You must like girls. And then as she said in this episode, she just went to a bar and saw boys kissing and kind of thought, oh my God, this is amazing.
Yeah. I think that like, it's actually it's a really important storyline that I don't think we've seen like properly talked about in Drag Race, which is the older, like the experience of older queer people and what they've like gone through. Cause like Tamisha Mann sort of born like 1970-ish, like early 70s. And then so like a teenager in the 80s, where like height of the AIDS epidemic, which we've heard a little bit about, but I suppose for her, kind of like when she was coming out, it would have been something like properly dangerous, and there would have been like a real fear about it. And it was great to see her talk about that. The one thing I'd say about Tamisha Mann is I think she needs to get out of her own head about the age thing a bit, because she keeps bringing it up and talking about like how much fire these younger queens have and how like they've got all this energy, and it's like, no, but you have it too. Like, she is an amazing performer. And I think that she keeps on kind of like tripping herself up and kind of like going back to thinking, talking about how these other queens are so like energetic and have so much to give. And it's like, well, no, you do too, Tamisha. You know, get it. We people are like dying over you. Like, you are like the queen of the season at the moment, I would say.
Yeah, like I did say that, you know, her confessionals is something like Scrap Untucked. I literally just want to watch all the footage of Tamisha's confessionals, because she's giving you, you know, from week one, the lady said go home, to this week. She's given you every single thing that you want to hear. Do you know the sort of way? Her, from this week, all these chihuahuas beside me and you go for the pit bull. I was yes.
Yes, absolutely.
It's exactly why we're loving her, and why we're falling into, why she's falling into our hearts so, so much. And what hasn't come to light a lot, I know she did discuss it in week one, but her story of cancer. So maybe she really, she said it herself, I'm not as good as I used to be, but I'm getting there. So maybe she's just kind of crawling that up, and she's using her age, and she's using her battle with cancer to get herself back to a certain position. And I'd say it is tough. It is probably tough to look at all these younger girls walking around her and thinking, I used to be like you. But as you said, Jim, she actually has it in spades, and she has it.
Yeah.
She's not a typical older RuPaul's Drag Race queen that we've seen in previous years. She is setting the bar for any older queen who sets foot through the workroom doors again.
No, Absolutely. Mm.
I was a bit disappointed we didn't get a Tamisha Lalari reunion moment, like Drag Mother and Drag Daughter. We never had that in a series before.
They've really not really touched upon it. And it's such a strange thing because, but you know what? Maybe it's a storyline that they did film. And they just haven't used because it hasn't given them the, because you know, that's what TV production is. You film 101 different things and you use 6 of them maybe.
Yeah.
And maybe they've banked all that footage. They just haven't used it. Hopefully we'll get to hear that if they spilled a bit of the tea later on in the season.
Oh, well, we know that they're queuing up a Tamisha versus Lala lip sync. Surely.
You know it's there. But it was a strange one not to touch upon, you know, for a stop. But then there's probably no beef. There's probably no issues. They probably are just mother and daughter. They're enjoying themselves. And that's what producers want to see.
On the flip side of the older queen storyline in the mirror moment, Simone talking about going to her Debs and drag, like, that is, as like someone who's coming through is just knowing who they are, like Simone.
I really, and I have it here down as well, it's something that you need to talk about as well, because it's never, like, I've never seen it done. It's never been done before. And I would say for her to do that, I don't know how old she is, but it's still, even to this day, to do something like that in high school in America, anywhere in the world, would be such a big thing. And I think that that's going to open up a lot of conversation and a lot of good conversation for queer kids in school who are hiding behind a facade of themselves to just get through life. It's something I did. I hid behind as much as I could to not be noticed as a gay kid. And I feel like her talking about that is really going to open up that conversation.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think it'll empower a huge amount of people to do the same and to be more, like, whether or not it actually empowers people to start going to prom and drag, it'll certainly empower people to be more kind of fearless in who they are and in their space, and kind of also hopefully with the, like, wide audience of Drag Race, because I too have, like, straight people, it'll also, like, show them the need to support those people and make sure that they know that they are free to be themselves when they're in, like, high school or when they're in college or when they're young and more vulnerable.
Yeah,
absolutely. Let's head over to the runway. Category is trains for days. First up was Denali with her Carnival Quetzalcoatl sort of Aztec canary or cockatoo. Did we like it?
So she said it was Kettlebird inspired. I had an image of a kettle. I thought, it doesn't look like my kettle. You know, it was gorgeous. It was beautiful. It was colorful. I felt the makeup was a bit, didn't really tie in with the rest of the look. I don't know why. It was colorful, but it just wasn't as structured as what I would have liked to have seen it. It was kind of that pastel dotted face, but the outfit itself, and ostrich feathers are expensive. Like that's an expensive look to be put together. And how she got that through Ryanair's customs, I do know.
she got that dig in at Joey J as well. She was like, 100% real ostrich feathers. No chicken feathers here.
No chicken feathers here, sis.
I thought she looked gorgeous as well. Like the outfit, the outfit was very carnival. The makeup, I didn't even really notice the makeup with the amount of colour that was going on. But you're right, it didn't jump out as like the central focus.
The central focus.
Yeah,
I wanted it to be a bit more pointed in its delivery, just to really like blow out everything else that was going on. But listen, some people will have loved the more softer side of it, I suppose.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
Olivia Lux was next, but did anyone else feel like she didn't, like, I didn't even know she was in the episode. Like,
yes. See, I was talking to Keen about this, because if you watch the little backstage bit in Untucked as well, they were talking about it. The queens themselves seemed to be losing their shit over what she had been delivering in the challenge. They were like, oh my God, Olivia, you're amazing. We thought you were in the top. And it just really makes you like think, God, the difference between what you see and what they're experiencing. I barely registered her, didn't think that she was kind of like really doing much this episode, and I didn't love this look all that much. It was sort of a bit,
does she struggle to get the character across on the runway? Because I think she always looks good, but you don't really, I just don't think she sells it enough.
Is that age, is that experience?
You're doing
it for 18 months, and although you look gorgeous and you look pretty, you may not have the personality. It was like, it was an ivory gold goddess moment. She said it was inspired by Beethoven, which I kind of was like, yeah, that's not lovely.
Sure.
Yeah. Another person who I think didn't necessarily bring much character to the look they were giving was Elliot's kind of leathery, lacy, white look with the ruffles and stuff. It just was, a little basic.
Oh, you mean Mother of the Bride?
Yes, that hair.
Everything about
it. Like, that wig.
she literally looked like a Mother of the Bride. It's how I felt. I did live for the wig. It is something like, you know, I love the structure, and I feel like she was put together well, and it looked lovely. It just screamed that kind of like that Mother of the Bride feel. But it didn't stand out.
I also felt the train was just sewed onto another look.
That's it. I've seen those bodysuits before. I've seen a lot of people in that sort of similar bodysuit, and that similar design. And then the train was just a part of it. There was a lot more clever ways that people did the train in this runway, and I feel we'll go as we kind of get down to it, you know, the sort of way.
Yeah.
Well, next up was Kimora Hall with her East Asian goddess dragon slug.
Mother of the dragon slugs, everybody.
I loved the skulls on her shoulders. I thought they were fantastic. Yeah.
No, she looked like she could have been a villain from Game of Thrones. Yeah.
Yeah.
And the detail in the back. Yeah.
She said that the Denali, I've never watched Game of Thrones, so I was like, or not Denali, Daenerys. See, yes. There you go, never watched Game of Thrones. But the detail on the back, I just feel like sometimes the devil is in the detail, and there's no real need, because we don't get to see it so up close. You're gonna say, oh, I put this on the train. That train's going to be shown for literally split seconds. Do you know that sort of way? So sometimes the detail doesn't really help you. But as always, she looks stunning. She looked put together. It was a gorgeous look.
No, absolutely. I think like there is absolutely no doubt about the fact that she is a fashion queen. She understands how to make things look spectacular. She puts looks together amazingly. And like, that is a real skill in itself, you know. And I think that, you know, we've seen that with every look she's put out has been flawless, like to the point of perfection. But she just carries herself in such an uncertain way. Like, you just, I think she speaks about it herself, and that need to break through, and that need to kind of just be able to be more confident in who she is.
But I suppose, what do you expect when Jada Essence Hall is in your family and she's just won, and she literally tore the house down, and is still to this day tearing the house down with what she's been doing, even through lockdown. So there's a massive pressure on her shoulders.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, and it's not just those skulls. Yeah. Simone was up next with her do-rag train, which was just flawless.
Flawless, and she owned it. And like you said, like we've said about Kimora, she had way much more of a personality. She walked down the runway. She knew what she was doing, and she took it all the way down the runway. And the colors were beautiful. You know, there was the blue and the pink, and the slight bit of denim in there, and the white. It was a really, really good look. She owned it. She knew what she was doing with the message of it. And she had confidence walking down. So if you have the confidence walking down the runway and you don't look like a deer in the headlights, then, you know, you can do good things.
No, absolutely. I think as well, she was someone who looked at the challenge and was like, right, well, how am I going to do this in a way that other people aren't going to have thought of doing it? And to have, like in whatever capacity, to have the train coming from the headpiece was a take that other people didn't do. And I thought that she looked I thought that she looked phenomenal. Like, I mean, the whole way through this episode, that she was the winner right the way through this episode. There was no question that she was going to be taking this week, and that look was just gorgeous, completely.
I'd say my second favorite look was also Lala Ri with her snakeskin assassin cape. I loved this.
Controversial. I didn't really like it. I don't know what it was about it.
Where do you land, Paul?
I'll be brutally honest with you. I land in the boat. I land in the middle of you. I literally. Okay. I am the ham of your sandwich. Yeah. Because I agree with one point. And do you know what? It did that thing of subliminal advertising when Rue said, "Oh, I love this." Then I went, "Oh yeah, I like it too." Because you're afraid to not pretend like you don't know who Cher is. So, you know, you're trying to move along. I thought the snake print itself is what I think I didn't like the most. I just felt like it could have been a bit more spectacular. But the design of the outfit and the way the snake left the trail as it went behind. And as well as that, like I said, me trying to my drag game, I took a picture of the mask situation and the headband, and I sent it to my designer, and I go, I like this.
Yeah.
Can we start to work on something that's a bit of a vibe like this? So I did take inspiration from it. I just thought that the print, if she had done that kind of grayscale snake print with a bit of neon through it, I really thought that could have been a massive look. It was just the coloring for me. I just thought it was a little bit bland, but she holds it together and she works it.
Yeah, no, I would agree with you. I think it was the print and the colour scheme all, overall, I didn't really enjoy. And I think that we've seen a couple of these kind of Mortal Kombat-esque kind of looks, and they're always done in quite vibrant colours, like the magentas or the blues. And I think that that probably would have been... I think that that probably would have elevated a bit more for me, but it wasn't... Again, when RuPaul said, oh, I love this, I had a moment of like, oh my God... What am I missing?
Next up was Utica with her... I didn't get the reference here. It was a sketch by Carol Burnett about a curtain.
So it was Carol Burnett doing a Gone with the Wind sketch. So it was like a reference to a reference to a reference to a reference. And RuPaul loves that. So yeah. I did actually think this was fantastic. I thought it was gorgeous. And Utica is an oddball queen. You can just see like the sort of... even more oddball than like Crystal Method or whatever, but and I'm really enjoying what she's bringing to the competition.
Yeah.
So I'm enjoying this one, and you guys clearly aren't.
Who's going to be the ham?
I do you know what? I have a note for every single person in my notes here, except Yuda is just blank, and I think that's just my feelings for Yuda. I'm just... blank.
Okay. So I'm the ham. I liked the look, ham. But I didn't scream train to me. It just sort of felt sort of jellyfish Cloddy. Shaped or bell shaped.
Yes, yeah.
But I liked the concept.
Yeah, moving swiftly forward.
On to Rosé with her electric blue 80s power suit with a tulle train. It was kind of two looks in one. I'm not sure how well they coalesced.
Yeah, Rosé really enjoyed herself wearing this look.
Yeah.
Yes.
she lived for her best life. Maybe she was in competition with Tull. I don't know. but I was glad when Michelle said it, that she kind of said, yeah, it's grand. It's nice. It's just a bit basic. It was a basic tux that had Tull added onto it.
Yeah.
The color was nice, but it was a real weird looking blue. It wasn't like a striking blue. If that was a deep navy or something like that, you might have gotten behind it. But I don't know. It could also be to do with the fact that she's not giving you too much likability so far. So it is tough when they walk down the runway and they're not completely turning it out, I suppose.
I think you're absolutely right, because Rosé is clearly a very competent performer and very good at everything she does. But as of yet, it comes back, it is such like a reality TV show cliche. It's like, we want to see that vulnerability. Like, you do want to see a bit of the person come through. And I completely agreed. I think that she looked perfectly fine. Like, it was a perfectly fine look. And it was, like, it obviously wasn't one of the bottom looks. It also wasn't one of the top looks. It was completely grand.
It's also not the material I associate with trains either. A train is kind of more slender and long, I would have thought. Kind of like the do-rag.
Cream. Yeah.
I have to say, I didn't like Gott's look. I was all here for the trans flag, but I just kind of felt it was like a dragonfly that lost its wings.
I feel like this was probably Gottmik's sheer look that they didn't get to wear when they were doing that thing. Because I don't think that it read train at all. I think that like they had brought this sheer look and they had this like bedazzled kind of leaf blower, and they were like, I'm taking this opportunity to wear this on the runway because I think it's pretty funny. I would imagine that they realized that they were safe and they were like, I'm just going to reinterpret the runway I went, because it did not read train at all.
Maybe more so it's like, I can't believe I'm not going to get to use my trans flag look. I could probably interpret that into a train, maybe.
Yeah.
I think maybe that was why.
I would agree with both. I liked it. It was nice. I don't think it fell under the category of what the challenge was, but it was passable.
Something now that I struggled to pass was this train driver from Tina Burner.
Train conductor. Yeah. Do you know what?
Category is Erin Road Aaron, you know.
The 1545 to Boris and Ossery has just carried on.
And I'll tell you what, I will be alighting at the next stop because I was not having it.
I did not. Maybe I stayed on the train because I did not get off over this look.
Is there a trolley? Let's find out. it's typical Tina Burner, but I feel like if you're going to read Joey J for not wearing a wig, you should be reading Tina Burner for the fact that she's trying to bring her own branding to the show. And it's not about your own branding. It's not about you being Tina Burner and, oh, look, that's on fire. Haha, that's Tina Burner. It's about adapting to the challenge and not adapting with your style every single time. Your own style should probably pretty much disappear after your entrance look.
Yes. Yeah, I wait for moments where it feels appropriate to bring it in. Because I don't like, and also I kind of get the impression with Tina Burner that she's kind of too clever by half, in that she's sort of, you know, trying to like reinterpret the challenges in like a way that sort of is like, you know, like kind of sort of what Simone did in this challenge as well, was like, I'm going to interpret this challenge in a way that is outside of the box. I think that that's what Tina's trying to do, but it just, it wasn't executed in a way that was like interesting or something, and it all felt a bit clunky. I didn't really enjoy it because it, like, it looked like a big rectangle walking down the stage.
And the train was white, but the outfit was red. I didn't understand that. Yeah. It looked like net curtains.
She's very much that product of, she has been auditioning for so many years and she's never gotten on, and now she's on it. The brand, the product has moved on, and she should be adapting to the challenges, not adapting the challenges to her, if that makes sense.
I think you're absolutely right. In a way, I kind of feel like she's kind of walked in there with sort of the same energy of like Bianca Del Rio, but Bianca Del Rio's version of Drag Race is finished. Yes. Like,
you've nailed it on the head there. And I'm so glad, because it was so annoying me as to what she was doing. But that's exactly it. Bianca Del Rio adapted every challenge to what Bianca Del Rio was. But that version of Drag Race is over and dead and gone.
Yeah.
Now I can watch it in peace, because I know exactly. What
I actually quite like this next look for Joey J with the lips and the tongue. It kind of made me smile when I actually saw the tongue and it had a piercing in the lips. But it made no sense from the front.
Made no sense
was
in the front.
Lip piercing.
Yeah,
I thought that was a drug reference.
Oh,
I thought that was like a
LSD.
Yeah, like sort of like kind of like on the tongue, and I was like, oh, like, you know, Joey J giving us an acid trip. But the piercing makes more sense.
Jesus Christ, what have you been doing during lockdown?
Living my best life.
Hide the paracetamol from mama.
You're a fan.
Well, I did get that it was a tongue stud. Piercing. Thank God. But you're right. I felt like the front just kind of, there was a lot to be desired from the front, because I just felt it looked a bit ill-fitting at points, especially up top. It looked like it wasn't sitting properly, and it wasn't as tight as it should be. I think if you're going to serve that dominatrix, it needs to be dominatrix. I think if that had been chains and whistles at the front and then that at the back,
yeah,
he would have really escalated that look. But I have to say, I did get a sigh of relief, and I shouldn't because of the style, but when he turned the corner and was in some sort of headpiece, I was like, oh, Mother Mary, thank God no one's going to read him to filth for not doing a wig or
blah. Yeah, I think on the hood, I think you're right. I think either it needed to be like stuck to the face, or else it needed to be like big and baggy and kind of like, it's either one or the other. Because it was sort of an awkward place where it was loose, but not in a way that felt intentional.
Yeah.
There was Candy Muse, and I really felt now this was Jessica Rabbit after a long night.
See, I felt it was more Gemma Collins on the Soap Awards red carpet. that's what I was feeling from it.
I felt it was Simone coming home from her Debs with the chicken fillet roll in her hand that she got for £4 and her new best friend who she was going to come and ride rotten. That was the story of energy. It just felt like basic drag, like basic bad Debs.
But like too raunchy for Debs though, to have like the slit all the way up the leg.
Well, it's the end of the night, you know, you've been out dancing, exactly, you've busted the sides.
When your parents aren't looking, they tear off those sides, get those legs out.
She was dancing so hard to Maniac that she ripped it.
Maniac 4000.
She got down in a full dress for Rock the Boat, and when she got up, it wasn't all in one piece.
She shouldn't have had that second bowl of soup. But anyway, she was mentioning how she had to change up her outfit last minute. So maybe there was something, like, I wonder what the other look was going to be. Or like what.
You'll probably see that on Instagram, possibly.
Yeah, hopefully, because I'd be curious, because it did feel quite basic. And then obviously the fact that we saw her, like, actually sewing it in the...
No, she didn't do it.
Well, that's true. Her squads did it.
she's just not really giving me a lot with regards to the runway looks. And again, she's holding the confidence of them, but I just don't feel like she's giving me everything that I want. Do you know what I mean? Yeah.
Finally, Tamisha Mann. We've seen her in this colour already. It's kind of the way we've seen Candy in that colour already, so I was a bit disappointed.
Disappointed because it just felt like another pageant outfit for me.
Yeah, I would agree. I think we saw her do a very similar version to this 2 weeks ago when she was doing her runway walk, or was it last week when she was doing her runway walk? But again, I think she just has such an aura about her when she walks out. Like, she kind of walks out like the kind of like the I own 51% of this company mega bitch. Yeah, it was fine though. It wasn't amazing. It wasn't blowing my mind.
No, but it is very much of a Lawrence Chaney thing. It's forgiven because she gives you everything else throughout the episode. So you do kind of go, yeah, it wasn't the best, but we'll move on.
Yeah.
So the top three were Simone, Candy and Rosé. Bottom three were Denali, Lallery and Kimora. Paul, any changes you'd like to make to them?
No, I felt like everything was pretty fair. There was no kind of standout moment that I went, she's been robbed or anything like that. I really I went with decisions. I was surprised. There was one safe queen that I was kind of surprised. I'm trying to look. Olivia. I was kind of surprised Olivia was safe. I thought there was going to be some sort of kind of like discussion between her and the judges. But that was about it.
Yeah. James? I think that it was fairly... Like, I think that in the bottom, I would have been happy... I think that Elias could have ended up in the bottom, as could Joey, but the ones who were in the bottom were also, I suppose, like their performances were the weakest. In terms of the tops, I think Simone and Rosé, I possibly would have swapped out Candy for Tina Burner.
Yeah, me too.
Because I think the performances were both very strong, and neither of them had amazing runways, but I would probably have said that Tina's runway was marginally better than
I just
Candy's.
Felt Tina acted. Candy didn't act. Candy played Candy. Tina acted. That's as an acting challenge, I would have put her top.
Very true, actually. Yeah, very true.
Yeah. But no, I think that it was fair enough. Like, I wasn't screaming at my TV about it.
No. So Simone wins, which I presume we are happy with, and then Denali and Kimora lip sync, and we've discussed that. Sad to see Kimora go. I think she had such potential. It's just a shame to see her get in her head.
I don't know. I funnily enough, because they were showing her as she was getting her goodbye from Rue and the judges, and I was kind of looking behind her to kind of go, who would I like to see in her place? And I have to say, I could have said goodbye to Utica this week and not really cared. She is on the lowest of my register with regards to who I'm liking at the minute. But I also do feel that Kimora is just basically look, and she is just giving you what we're seeing. She is beautiful. She is stunning. But she's performed for us twice now.
Yeah.
And both times I've not gone, oh my God, she's amazing. She's performed with her outfit on. She's not performed as a performer. The outfit's worn her. She hasn't worn the outfit. I think that's a big problem going forward.
Thank you again for joining us today. Where can people find you online? What do you have coming up from the safety of your home?
From the safety of my gaff. No, listen, at RuPaul Writer across all social medias. Coming up, there's some big things for towards the end of the year. There's some big shows that are going to come out for hopefully after the summer. For the moment, I'm just keeping my mental health in check because, you know, we're all suffering at the minute, and just making sure that I'm up. And like I said, I'm prepping some new looks and prepping some new things to up my own Drag Race game, because you never stop growing in this game. But yeah, so keep an eye.
Yeah, how do you feel now the queens are all together?
Yeah, it was nice to see everyone in the same room. And, you know, you do sort of really appreciate the kind of diversity of the cast. I think these acting challenges are always a bit rough. I think it's kind of unanimously kind of acknowledged that they're never the best.
Trash.
Pretty trash. This, I do think, was one of the stronger ones. Good on the queens. I think if you watched on Tuck, you will have seen them talking about it, how, like, it really wasn't a case of, like, you could separate the herd out very easily to be like, these are the bottoms, these are the middles, these are the tops. It was pretty evenly paced. Sorry to see Kimora go, but at the same time, really couldn't have seen anyone else exiting at this stage.
Yeah, she just had such potential, I thought, in her Meet the Queens, and I was rooting for her, but yeah, it's clear she was the one to go. She was in her head, and we probably weren't going to get her best. So next week it's the ball challenge, one of my favorites. It's a bag ball. Last time it was a ball, so I'm not really sure what the three themes are going to be, but I presume one of them is going to be making a look out of bags. So I'm looking forward to that. And on Friday, we'll be back with you for episode 3 of Drag Race UK. Have a lovely week, and we'll chat to you then. See you. Love you. Bye.
This show is part of the Head Stuff Podcast Network, a hub for the creative and the curious. Shows are produced in association with Headstuff and the Podcast Studios Dublin. Find out more or become a member at headstuffpodcasts.com.
If you want to support this podcast and get a full ad-free episode, sign up to Headstuff Plus.